Czechoslovak top communist Rudolf Slansky is a tragic figure of 20th century history in the classical sense of the word. In the end, the fate of the once powerful and self-made man was mapped out elsewhere. Slansky rose to the top of the Czechoslovak Communist Party and played a key part in its seizure of power in February 1948. For some periods before and after the takeover, he was probably more important than party leader Clement Gottwald, who was increasingly hitting the bottle for alcoholic consolation. But at the height of his power, Slansky was toppled by Soviet leader Joseph Stalin's paranoid search for scapegoats and purge victims. The repressive state machinery which Slansky had helped put in place in communist Czechoslovakia was turned against one of its creators. Historians have already pieced together the story of the Slansky Show trial, the most shocking event to hit the Communist Party in power up till then. Some say the party never really recovered from the revelation that such a trusted and top-placed party member could have been a conspirator for the imperialist, Titoist and Zionist enemies of the time. But in spite of the recent historical spadework, many questions still remain. Why, for example, was Slansky in particular picked out for sacrifice after such an exemplary record serving the party? Igor Lukesh is Professor of International Relations and History at Boston University and has researched and written about Slansky's trial and execution.
The fact that Slansky was chosen has really no rational explanation. He was, of course, a completely devoted Stalinist from his earliest moments in politics, from the early 1920s when the party came into existence. He was eager and willing to simply emulate the line that came from Moscow.
He thinks that Stalin's clear belief in the Machiavellian principle that a prince should be feared rather than loved probably played a big part in deciding Slansky's fate.
It in fact seems to me that Slansky may have been chosen precisely because he was so loyal to Stalin, because in killing him, Stalin's message to the rest of Eastern Europe leadership was, if he can die, if he is not safe, then nobody is. Perhaps the main reason of the main motivation behind this and other similar show trials that swept across Eastern Europe was to terrorize the East European communist bosses into absolute and total submission.
Rudolf Slansky was born in the village of Niewiestice, south of Pilsen, in 1901. A talented student, he moved to the capital Prague to continue his studies, but in the turbulent years following the creation of the new Czechoslovakia and evolving Russian Revolution, he was increasingly sidetracked by politics. As a 20-year-old in 1921, he was one of the founder members of the Communist Party. From 1924, he was a journalist on party papers, getting his proletarian baptism in the coal and steel city of Ostrava, where he became party regional secretary. It was also in Ostrava that his friendship developed with future party leader Clement Gottwald. When Gottwald seized power from the old party guard in 1929, Slansky was also one of the main beneficiaries. He was appointed to the new Central Committee and Politburo and became party secretary for Prague. But it was not all smooth sailing. The Communist Party was banned at the time, and Slansky's attempts to build up its underground network got him into trouble more than once with Moscow. In 1935, he was banished from the top party echelons for not promoting a strong enough common front against fascism. He took the criticism badly, but was back at the top a year later. In the aftermath of Munich in 1938, Slansky, like other Czechoslovak party leaders, fled to Moscow. Like other exiles, Slansky and his family were housed in the famous Hotel Lux, where Stalin's secret police made nightly selections of who would be purged. Historian Igor Lukesh.
The NKVD arrested on a daily or rather nightly basis, and the people who lived there This is well attested to by many participants. Essentially, could not sleep through the night because you could hear the arresting teams spreading through the building, and all you could do really was just to listen for the steps, whether they would stop in front of your door or whether that very night they would still stop at somebody else's door. I think these people went through absolute horror.
The Nazi attack on the Soviet Union was a relief for the Czech communist exiles because it curbed the purges. After taking part in the Slovak national uprising in mid-1944 and a grueling escape across the mountains to evade the Nazis, Slansky returned to Czechoslovakia on the heels of the victorious Red Army. The party was riding a popular wave, and Slansky was at the top of that wave as the second most powerful man after Gottwald. Slansky's task as party general secretary was to build the party at home. As its membership soared and its influence developed, so did that of the general secretary. He picked most of the regional party leaders himself and became a central figure as it prepared to infiltrate and sabotage democratic parties and make a bid for power. In the run-up to February 1948, Slansky's managerial and organisational genius and Gottwald's sporadic failure to manage his alcoholism meant he was at the zenith of his power. Igor Lukes.
Perhaps in the period 45-48, he may have been, on occasion, perhaps even more important than Gottwald himself, who became more and more dependent on alcohol and at times became nothing but a simple drunk. And it was therefore up to Slansky to prepare the party for the final confrontation with the democratic, with its democratic rivals. And it was Slansky who I think proved more than once in the period from 45 to 48 that he was in fact brilliant, if I can put it in quotation marks, a brilliant tactician.
Once in power, the party increasingly sought to have its say in running the country. Over time, this put it on a collision course with the new communist ministers in government and made the normally friendless Slansky even more enemies. He still, however, had his trump card, his close friendship with Gottwald. The real threat, however, came from Moscow and Stalin's real or artificial conviction that the new communist regimes of Central and Eastern Europe were being undermined from within by top party officials. The first attempt to weed out a conspiracy at first cast Slansky, together with Gottwald, as a victim. But during the early months of 1951, his role began to be redrafted by the imported Soviet investigators as the mastermind of an anti-state conspiracy.
If you actually look at the period of, let's say, the last year and a half of Slansky's life, you discover that there had been more than one occasion when Stalin demanded harsh measures to be applied against Slansky. And he demanded it of Gottwald. And Gottwald surprisingly resisted. I think that if there is one episode in this story, it is how long Gottwald had resisted the pressure that came from Moscow for Slansky's arrest and his demise and destruction.
The pressure building up for that arrest probably became irresistible when a letter implicating Slansky as a Western agent, or the so-called Great Sweeper, was intercepted. It was a plant by an agent working for exiled Czechoslovak anti-communist intelligence chief František Moravec. The arrest followed 2 weeks later after Slansky returned to his Prague villa from a reception. The process then began of moulding Slansky's testimony for the show trial that was to be prepared. Here, unlike many of his colleagues, he resisted for a long time and narrowly failed to take his own life in prison.
He, in fact, behaved in a rather courageous way. He confessed only to things that had been already confessed to by his colleagues, and he tried as hard as he could not to implicate unnecessarily others.
Trial sparked a wave of anti-Jewish hatred. Slansky and most of his alleged fellow conspirators were Jewish. He was hanged on December 3, 1952, at Prague's Pankratz prison.